1850, 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon. You are very welcome to Liveline. Katie Hannan with you today until 3 o'clock. Now, if you were listening to the news there, you will have heard that the European Commission was today launching a raft of proposals to steer Europe to meet its climate goal of reducing carbon emissions by 55% by 2030. Tony Connolly there telling us that it's the most momentous stride forward by the EU since the introduction of the euro. Now, quite coincidentally, we've had three listeners in touch with us, three listeners who were trying to do their bit to reduce carbon emissions in their own way, with, I think, when you hear, you will agree with us, with mixed results. We'll be hearing from Kieran Traynor in a moment. He's and his efforts to get grants for putting in thermal panels in his 1970s house. We'll be hearing from William Horgan and the saga, and it is quite a saga, of trying to get an electric car charging unit put into his home. But first, I want to bring in Dennis. Dennis, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you?
€16,000, Dennis.
Yes.
Okay. That's what being a good climate citizen is costing you.
Yes. Well, basically, that's what it's costing for a battery that go back into the car.
Okay. Well, take us back. When did you get the car?
I bought the car in 2019.
And it's one of these hybrid cars.
It's a hybrid. It's an E-Class Mercedes Blue Tech hybrid, an E300. So when I purchased the car, it was 6 years old.
Right, okay.
So and I bought it second-hand.
Okay, okay. And you bought it second-hand. And how much did you pay for it?
I paid 15,000 along with my car that I traded in, which was an 07 car I traded in, which I had for I had it since 2012, so I had it for 7 years.
Okay, so what you that wouldn't have given you too much in the trade, and
so 3,000, I'd say, in the trade.
Okay, so you paid €18,000 for a car that was
a 132.
Okay, yeah. Okay, so you were delighted with yourself. You were doing the right thing, as you thought.
Yeah, because I had the previous car I had was diesel, so I said, look, let's get with the programme here. Everyone, they're pushing, all you hear is electrified, hybrid, blah, blah, blah. So I said, right, I'll buy a hybrid. Now, I knew nothing about hybrid cars, absolutely nothing about them. So I went online, going to be reset, suggest, or good for the environment, the carbon footprint, blah, blah, blah. So I went ahead and purchased the car. Grand, not a bother. Car was working grand. So then...
And did you save yourself a lot in fuel with the hybrid?
You do, actually, yeah, no... The premises of them is very good, yes, I would agree, and obviously the tax on it is a hell of a lot cheaper than what I would have been paying before, and yes, you would, you'd save yourself a hell of a lot, but you're saving yourself a lot at the time, but obviously now, well, what's after happening with it now, you're not saving yourself at all.
Okay, so what went wrong?
Right, well, there was a few minor issues that went on with the car, but that's just obviously wear and tear with a car of its age, which is fine, you just rectify them yourself. But now, what's after happening is, there's an error message when you put a diagnostic onto it, which says, hybrid high voltage battery has reached its life expectancy. So in other words, the hybrid part of the car is no longer working, or it's malfunctioning. So subsequently, I rang Mercedes Ireland, couldn't get through, they don't seem to speak to the public. So I emailed Mercedes, which is actually Daimler in Stuttgart in Germany. I emailed them. They said, get back on contact. You have to deal with the people where the car is registered. So I got back onto Mercedes Ireland. I spoke to you schedule a call. I spoke to someone there. And basically what they told me, you're on your own. The battery for that car, there was never a replacement battery for that car. There is a battery for a later model which would work in that car. And the cost of the battery alone is €16,000.
So almost the price of the car again.
Of the car. And that's not without labour costs. That's just the price of the battery. For a two-year-old car, it does not make economical.
I suppose it's an eight-year-old car. It's 2 years.
Yeah,
you've had it 2 years.
Beg your pardon.
So is that the life expectancy of that battery?
I to be honest with you, I'm not getting anywhere with Mercedes. So obviously I assume... the warranty on that car expired in 2019, so obviously they're only saying that the life expectancy of the car is for 6 years from the date of registration to the date of the end of the warranty.
Well, I don't know. Well, I'm not sure what the legal or technical issues around that is, but I'm sure they're saying that the car has a longer life expectancy than 6 years. But you're saying it's coincidentally a year, 2 years after the warranty is up, you need a new battery.
Yeah, the car, if you look at the pictures that I sent in, the car is immaculate. It's absolutely immaculate. And to the untrained person, I could go and sell it to some person, just sell it privately and say nothing. There's no fault showing up, there's nothing. And they wouldn't be none the wiser. But that's immorally wrong to do that.
So can you, if you're driving the car now, apart from seeing the warning light, is there anything to let you know there's something wrong?
No, there's nothing. That's what I'm saying. There's nothing showing up. But what is happening is, so obviously it's a hybrid. So when you start the car, it starts in the hybrid electric motor. That's what starts. And when you proceed to go over 8 kilometres an hour, it kicks into the diesel motor. So you can drive along. So when you start the car, you have to put the revs up real high. And it obviously must bypass the hybrid. I'm not sure. So when you're driving along grand, but when you stop, it's obviously the stop-start system. So it stops and it goes into electric. That's when the error comes up. The car goes into limp mode. You have to turn the car off, wait 30 seconds, turn the car back on and go again.
Right.
So it's just not practical.
Yeah, so you could, you can drive it, but as you say, that's not a long term solution there.
No, it's not a long term solution. Basically, the car, there's an issue with the car. It needs to be rectified. The battery life in the car, it must be only for 6, 7, 8 years, whatever. So my issue is here, I hope to have that car for 6, 7, 8, 9 years. That's what I hope to have the car for, not to have it for 2 years. Surely to God, a company the size of Mercedes, which makes billions upon billions of euro a year, it's an exclusive brand, that surely to God, the technology to make the battery, the life of the battery, a lot longer. It doesn't make sense. What I was told by Mercedes Ireland was, what I've been told, it's 16 grand, and what I was told, the car is more or less obsolete. So I'm looking to scrap the car.
Okay. Well, I mean, no more than yourself. I don't know an awful lot about the life span of electric car batteries. And maybe some of our listeners might help us out on that one.
Yeah,
I'd love to know if this is like just a particularly bad situation you found yourself in, or if this is something that people buying electric cars should be very aware of, or hybrid cars indeed, as you did. William, will you stay there? Because I want to bring in William now, because you also bought an environmentally friendly car, William.
Yes, I did, last month.
What kind of a car did you buy?
It's actually a Renault Zoe GT. It was the kind of top of the range Renault Zoe car.
Right. Would you be worried now after hearing Dennis's story?
I'd be worried about lots of things now in the future with these things, But it being an all electric car, at the moment I'm just delighted with it. I'm very happy with it, and hopefully I don't have problems like that chap there down the line,
Okay, but you did have another issue.
Yeah, my issue at the moment now is basically bought the car, very happy with it. Tested out the charging units, the public charging units, very straightforward, very, very easy to use. And the next step then I decided, I might as well get a home charging unit because there's a €600 grant available for them at the moment. So having got a few local estimates here, they were fairly high, you're talking about 1,700, maybe up to 2,000 for these home charging units. But now they're probably very advanced technical type units, So as a customer of Electric Ireland, I would be entitled to have one of their units fitted to my house for €899.
Okay.
Which sounds very good. Then if you take into account €600, that's kind of happy days,
Okay. So did you get on to Electric Ireland?
I rang Electric Ireland. And answered a few questions very quickly. They said, yeah, that's fine. We'll take the money now, please. I paid them the €899 there and then. There were no conditions attached at all to the payment. So about 3 weeks later, an electrician employed by them came to my house opened the fuse box, opened the meter box, and straight away said, oh, there's a problem with what he called the tail. It's a cable from the meter, as I understand, from the meter to the fuse box. It was an older 10 millimeter diameter cable, and it has to be upgraded to a 16 millimeter. So
at a cost, no doubt, William.
Well, that work would be done by ESB Networks at a cost of. I actually got an invoice yesterday for €168 to do that job.
Okay.
Now he informed me, of course, that ESB Networks would do that work. And then he proceeded to give me a form, which is a notice of potential hazard, which he also sends on to Safe Electric. Now, that's a statutory body which kind of regulates the whole electrical installation of things and whether it's safe or not. You know, I don't know exactly what their purpose is, but it's a safety thing anyway. I contacted ESB Networks. They said, oh, yes, that's very well. Yeah, we can do that job for you for €168. You must get your electrical contractor to send a certificate to the Safe Electric people stating that it is safe to perform the work at your property.
So you would have to get an electrician out to your house to say it's okay for Electric Ireland to send their guy to do the work. And that you are then accepting the risk, or your electrician is.
Yes, yeah. Now, I kind of got confused at this stage, to be quite honest. Now, the people that Electric Ireland sent out are obviously qualified electricians. They declined to certify it safe to do the work.
Did they say why?
I don't know. You see, this is where I'm having a problem understanding what's happening here. Electric Ireland, the people who actually would physically do the work, decline and just don't provide that certificate either. So for some reason, they want some individual local chap here to certify that it's safe to do work. Somebody else does the work. If there's a problem, the guy who certified it was safe maybe is held responsible. It's kind of passing the buck, I think.
Have you asked somebody to do that?
I've asked one or two chaps now that have done very good work for me in the past. I mean, they're highly qualified. They are very reluctant to do it. If they were to do it, it would be as a personal favour to me because it's a risk they're not really prepared to take. And I understand fully what they're talking about, you know.
Is it a high-risk thing? Is there some level of risk attached that we're not au fait with?
I don't know. There must be some reason why these organisations don't want to take responsibility.
Right.
They seem to want someone else to be the fall guy if something happens. Now, I'm sure they're all qualified electricians. Maybe something has happened down the line that we're not generally aware of and it has created this situation. But
okay, so your situation now is that Electric Ireland won't do it on... you need to get somebody to do it, basically. And as you say, that will be a big... You'll have to pull in a big favour there if they're going to do that because Electric Ireland aren't willing to take... to sign this cert to basically say this is to accept the risk for this.
And also, like, I mean, I don't think it's fair that I should put somebody in a position here locally to do it if those other people aren't prepared to do it. And by the way, like, I mean, Electric or ESB Networks, please arrange for your electrical contractor to perform this or to provide a certificate. Now, I've paid Electric Ireland my money up front. I don't personally have an electrical contractor I don't pay anyone for that. I don't have one. I would consider Electric Ireland to be my electrical contractor, to be quite honest, and after paying them and they're qualified electrical people to come out and do the job, I can't see why it can't be done simply, you know.
Okay. Well, look, will you hang on there for a second? Because I want to bring in Kieran. Kieran Trainer. Good afternoon, Kieran.
Good afternoon.
Yeah. Kieran, you wanted to put thermal panels into your house.
No. I have thermal panels in my house and it's putting on PV panels now. Ah. I put thermal panels in 2016. I was very, very happy with them. They cost me about $8,000. And then I went to get PV panels in. And I've registered for the grant.
Yeah.
And they asked you a lot of questions. Your own house, you know, when was it? Is it before such and such a date and that? And everything grand. And I registered. And I started to work. And to start to put up the panel. And there was a BER came to the house to see the BER rating. This is before the work was really done.
Right.
And with the thermal panels in 2016, I had a 10-year search for a D2.
Right.
And when the new assessors for the panels, PV panels, came, they said it was reduced to an E2. They didn't actually know there was a D2 cert on the premises.
Sorry, just to explain to people, I suppose, if they're not familiar, these are the energy ratings certification of the house, and a D2 would be a pretty good energy rating for a house of your house is a 1970s house, Kieran, is it?
Yeah.
So you were putting in the PV panels. And you were hoping that this would again improve the rating.
Oh, definitely. And I spent about another 12,000 between the two, the thermal and the EV panels. I spent just over 20,000.
Okay. And how much was the grant that was going to be available?
The grant was 6,000 for the PV panels, and I got batteries for storage.
Mm-hmm.
And it's 600, I think,
yeah.
So my supplier of the PV panels said that no, I wouldn't qualify because the panels wouldn't put it up to a C3. You have to have a minimum of C3. So I wrote to Eamon Ryan, and his secretary replied, and wanted more details. I supplied the details of the house that it was built in the 70s and to the style of the 70s, large windows. Now, I mean extremely large windows. Now, I pumped the walls, outside walls, and insulated the roof and did everything. But I am being penalized because I have a house with 1972, say, and you lose points for the age of the house. You lose points for the fact that there's a fireplace in the house. You lose points because you have big windows.
And is
you lose points for aluminium windows.
So basically, you lost so many points, you were not eligible for the grant.
Well, you see, I went and to get another assessor to do it, and I explained to him everything I had done, and he said, "I don't really think, you know, that you get to a C3 with what you've done."
This is again to explain a BER rating of C3.
This is a different fella, and that cost 300. And the thing is, I'd already got one done. Now, the company that supplied the panels, they paid for that. And I was prepared to get another one done. And he says, "I don't think you're going to make it." And I said, "But look, the assessors that came before never asked me, was there walls pumped or was there insulation or anything?" And I was told, "You don't have to ask you. It's a visual."
It's a visual.
But I mean, it's visual.
So
you've no chance. You've no chance.
So you're saying, and obviously, a lot of people who would be, trying to go for these grants would be in the kind of houses that you're in, that would have fireplaces, that would have the big windows, that would have aluminium windows. And so you're saying that if you're in that situation, really, as you found out, forget about it.
Yeah. But now I could qualify. If I did everything that SEAI wanted me to do.
Which would be to remove the fireplace and change the windows and all that.
Yeah. Well, I got a quote for the windows 3 years ago. It would be 52,000. You know.
So
I it's not feasible. Now, I tell you, I have the panels and I find them fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. You know.
Tell me though, Kieran, why did you want to do this in the first place?
Well, I'm 80 years of age, my wife is 73, and I want a wee bit of comfort and safety.
Yeah.
You know. And I said, and now I borrowed the money for the first panels, and I borrowed the money for the second panels, and I was backing on getting the grant. But I've spoken to different people in relation to SEAI and Eamon Ryan's private secretary, and they just give you the same speed. SEAI are the ones that make the conditions. I appreciate that. But what I am saying is the crossbar is too high.
The bar is too high.
People.
Yeah,
for ordinary people.
But when you say you wanted, you know, comfort and do you mean financial comfort or like, or is it that
no,
you
no,
make
no,
the house
no.
more comfortable?
In my age and that, and the fact that you've got the PV panels and batteries, you can have storage. You know.
Yeah.
And I was looking at it from that aspect. But I reconciled myself that I am not getting the batteries. And all you get is the same old stripe over again and over again. SEAI is responsible. Then you have the like of Eamon Ryan advocating for people to spend money, to give green charges, green footprints, and all the rest. His policy is make a difference, be part of the greener future, get involved, take action. Well, I did that, and I feel I've been penalised.
Yeah. And did you feel like, and you said for comfort and for all that, I mean, but did you do it as well for, like, did you have a view on climate and the need to make changes?
Well, I do. But to be quite honest, I'm more interested in the future comforts than the climate. And that's telling you the truth at my age.
Right.
You know?
Okay.
I contacted a TD, the local TD, and all they do is put down a question in the door. And that's them finished. That's their commitment. There's nobody there out to help you.
Yeah. Well, I don't think you'd be the first or last, Kieran, to have that issue, that you have to put forward an awful lot of money and in order to be in a position to avail of the grants. And I suppose in your case, as you say, it wouldn't be worth your while at all. By the time you'd have made all those changes, you would have spent way more than you would have got back in the grant.
But SEAI...
This is Sustainable Energy, just in case, again, this is Sustainable Energy Ireland. The organisation that gives out these grants, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But what I'm saying is, I got on to them, and I said, well, look, I'm actually putting on 12 panels that will generate 4.68 kilowatts. And I have 3 batteries which will store 7.2 kilowatts. And, you know, I was told, well, the PV panels don't mean much. Now, I've gone and I've changed all the bulbs in the house, all the electrical fitness and that. And, well, they don't really add up to much. This is what you're told.
Yeah.
And they're advocating all this.
Kieran, can I ask you to hang on a minute? Because we were talking to Dennis there a short while ago about the car battery that has let him down now, an 8-year-old Mercedes hybrid car battery. I've got Eamon on the line. Eamon, good afternoon.
Hi, Katie. Good afternoon.
You know a bit about this.
That's right. Yeah. I have a social enterprise called Range Therapy with Dr. Barry McMahon, and then we specialise in car batteries, especially for older cars.
When you say specialise, what do you do with them?
So say we take the Nissan Leaf, which are 10 years old, and they had a range of 100 kilometres. So what we do is we either replace the main battery pack or we add an extender battery pack so that it can go 200 or 300 kilometres. Batteries, you know, batteries in cars are totally different to the battery in your mobile phone, because your mobile phone only has a single cell and we completely charge it to death, whereas a battery management system in a car ensures that you never use below 10% or over 90% of the battery pack. So it's minded during its life, and it should last up to 25 years.
Oh, should it? So what do you say to Dennis then?
I think one is it's very bad luck, and it sounds like there's a fault in the battery. There's a new EU regulation that's very helpful here, and what the EU is saying, that a battery pack should still have over 80% of its capacity after 100,000 kilometres, and that it is the responsibility of the manufacturer to replace it if that doesn't happen. But poor Dennis, I think, is close enough to 100.
Let's ask Dennis, do we still have Dennis?
Yeah, still here.
How many kilometres have you on the clock there, Dennis?
There's 66,000 miles on it.
Oh, that's probably just over the 100,000 kilometres. I do the sum in my head, but I think it is a bit over. So he won't qualify for that.
Well, I mean, there's a moral argument here that's the minimum line that the EU is saying. But, you know, for a company, you know, with deep pockets like Mercedes, they shouldn't allow this to happen because it's bad for their reputation. But it also gives the wrong impression about EVs. You know, with climate change and with transport causing 40% of our emissions, we need to change completely to electric cars. And it's not good if there are bad stories like this on Liveline or in the mass media. And, you know, our purpose really is to try and change the attitude that, you know, electric cars are just better than petrol cars. And we need to transition to them.
And so you're saying Dennis really has just very, very bad luck, it sounds like.
That's right. If a battery pack is well managed, you know, lithium-ion battery pack, you know, there's maybe 50 cells in it. They should last for 25 years.
And well managed, how do you manage your battery pack in a car?
So there's a piece of technology, a very important core piece of technology called a battery management system, a BMS, and it watches every single cell in the car and makes sure that every cell stays in family, and if it doesn't, then it helps the weaker cells keep up with the rest of them. And that's vital. And then usually there's also a thermal management system that doesn't allow the battery temperature go above what it's happy with. Now, because Ireland has a very moderate climate, it's not as important for us, but for hotter and colder climates, it's important that the batteries are kept within the right temperature.
Right. So any advice to Dennis then?
Well, I think you should push Mercedes. This is a very bad sign. It is a fault of the battery, and I think, you know, but there probably is no legal channel for him, but there is a moral channel. And then you could kind of shame them a bit in saying that the battery in a Tesla car that has been recently studied by Dalhousie University will last 2.5 million miles. And so, you know, Mercedes should do better than Tesla, but unfortunately, you know, the startup Tesla has a far superior battery pack.
Yeah, well, we've put in questions to Mercedes, so hopefully we will get a response from them. Dennis, haven't had any luck, of course. You've done your best to get responses.
No, there doesn't seem to be. And what Mercedes Ireland are saying is basically you're on your own.
Would it put you off getting another car? Like listening to Eamon there now, who's saying that, you know, this is, you've just had a particularly bad raw deal there, that this would not be typical of what would happen with an electric car battery?
To be perfectly honest with you, I don't think I'd buy a hybrid again unless I, like, as that chap that was just on, Eamon. Unless, like, you had some obviously independent people obviously saying, look, well, that we can stand over this, because, like, you're buying a Mercedes, like, it's top of the range. You don't expect this to happen. I know I only have the car 2 years, like, but it just completely puts you, like, when you break it down, right, the 66,000 miles works out about 8,200 miles a year. So you break that down into a month, it's nothing, like. But some people do it in the week.
Yeah, it is.
Like, it really doesn't make sense. Like, it's about 690 miles a month. Some lads do that in a week.
Yeah, there's definitely a flaw in your battery. That it should last for, you know, like the Tesla battery lasts 2.5 million miles in its recent tests independently. Yeah. And that's what we expect of batteries, that they will outlive the car. And, you know, that's very good news for us. And we reuse batteries from older cars over and over again. So it's a bad news story.
Okay.
Yeah, I know, but in saying that, though, like obviously you might have seen the pictures, but if you, as I said to the presenter of the show, the car is immaculate. Everything is immaculate apart from the battery. Like, it just really, like, beggars belief that how a company that puts millions into technology each year, makes millions from this, they could stand and just go be blasé about it and, like, oh, you're on your own.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, as I say, we'll see if they come back to us with any responses to that, Dennis. We'll take a break there.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
I want to bring in Itel McKenna now. Itel, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie.
Yeah, you were listening to our callers there with their tales of woe.
I was listening and I just thought, I feel terrible sympathy for them, but I just thought it's just such bad stories, and I just wanted to tell you a good story, that I have got solar panels and I have got an electric car and a charger, and I have had absolutely no problems, and everything went like clockwork, and the last grant for my charger just came in the other day into my bank account, and everything worked out really well, and SEI were really helpful. And everybody that I met along the way was great.
Brilliant.
And I just wanted to put another story, because it is the future and we have to go electric. So I feel really sad for the people that have such bad experiences. But there are lots and lots and lots of very, very good experiences out there too.
And tell me, why did you go down this road, Itel? As in, did the panels come first or the electric car? What was the...
No, the whole thing came together because I'm a grandmother, and for the sake of the future, we have to change the way we're living. And it's part of the change that I am trying to make.
Fair play to you, Itel. And you say everything went smooth. You got the panels, you applied for your grant.
Got the grant, got in the charger, got my grant. Everything. I mean, it worked out really well and I'm really happy with it. I think it takes a bit of adjusting and getting used to, because you kind of do everything while the sun is shining. But you turn on the washing machine and the dishwasher. But it's just a new way of life and a new way of thinking. And it is the future. You know, there will be lots and lots of hiccups along the way and lots of difficulties. And it can be mind-boggling sometimes, the way you've got to negotiate your way through stuff, and you need a lot of help. But it is what we have to do. It is what is the future.
And tell me now, Itel, because we were talking about this earlier, climate anxiety, which is this idea that when, you know, what would have been great news a few years ago, like the news of the weather, great weather, heat wave coming up this weekend, 28 degrees, when you hear that now, does a little part of you go, ooh, what's happening? Is this the start of the end of the world?
Well, you would need to be pretty unaware not to realise that climate change is there. And it's not just the heat and what is happening to desertification and all those other things and the heat waves in Canada. It's also that our whole way of living and growth has to change, because we cannot continue to have the kind of abuse of the planet if we're going to survive as a people, and if my children and my children's children are going to have a future. So, to my mind, you are really burying your head in the sand if you don't realise that that is what's happening. But I think what we need is, you know, leadership and people to show us the way out of it. And I have to say the SEAI, to my mind, are wonderful and very helpful and incredibly courteous and lovely people to deal with. And there is a lot of help out there, you know, in local communities and, you know, there's a lot of help out there.
Yeah, and there is a lot of grants available. I mean, that is true. But I know people do say that You know, grants are great if you have all the money up front to you know, do the work, and that
well,
might
I
be a problem.
I borrowed money. So, you know, it's, you don't have to have all the money up front. And there are also lots of helps out there if you want to do something to your house.
Are you, have other members of your family gone down this road?
Yes, they have.
So this is something that you've talked about as a family, and it's, you know, because, I mean, it's a big step to go, not just to get one thing done, but to get the car changed and get a charger and all that.
Yes, but it's logical.
Yeah. And you have grandchildren, you said, Itel?
Yes.
And I'm sure they are super aware of all of this, because that generation, you know, looks on the world in a completely different way.
They do, and they are super aware, and they are prepared to, I think, to change. I hope to change. And you would like to think that as people, we would do it before it becomes impossible to do, or before it becomes so difficult that so many people will suffer as a result of our carelessness. So I think there's great goodwill out there, and that young people are amazing, absolutely amazing. In the things that they do and the things that they believe in. And they're not stupid. They can read the signs the same as anybody that is willing to read the signs can. But at the same time, I think those people that are trapped, for example, you know, if you're a farmer, it's incredibly difficult to know where to turn and what to do. And you need great leadership and great help to be able to change so that you're not responsible for as much pollution as one particular industry is, as is transport and, you know, many other sections of the community.
Yeah, I do think there is a kind of, particularly with agriculture and with farmers, there is that sense that they are constantly being blamed, and they do feel that they're being backed into a corner, and that they're, you know.
Yeah, they do. And to be fair, they were told to expand. They were told to have produced more milk. And now they're being told that they're the devil incarnate. Now, I mean, that's not fair. That's not right. You have to have a much longer view of things, and you have to accept that they did what they were asked to do, and they did it very well. And it is very unfortunate that it is now part of the problem that we have to solve.
Okay, I want to give you your own environmental show. You are putting things in a way that I think a lot of people out there will agree with. Would you hang on for me, because I want to bring in another caller now. Ray, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie.
Yeah, you were in the electric truck business.
I was.
And what's your point then?
Don't buy electric cars and trucks.
Okay. Why not?
The problem with them is the batteries. The batteries are made of lithium iron fluoride. It's a chemical compound, and it wears out over time. So if you buy an electric like that, I'm not trying to push that lady down who was on there a few minutes ago. She wasn't aware of it. But they wear out, and when they wear out, you have to replace them. And let's say you spend 40,000 on an electric car, it'll cost you 20,000 to replace the batteries.
But were you not listening? Were you listening to Eamon Stack there, who was talking about, you know, battery management and all of that?
Yeah, well, I mean, if they can recycle them, that's okay. But apparently, these are highly toxic. These are highly toxic materials in the batteries, and they're very difficult to recycle. Plus, the fact is, the materials to get the batteries made comes from South America and China. And they use slave labour to extract it out of the ground. So really, the whole thing is a complete and utter deviation from what we're trying to do. Now, the thing is also, if you're charging the batteries and you use a fast charger, that damages the cells in the batteries. So it lessens the life of the batteries.
And did you say, when I say you're in the electric truck, did you sell electric trucks?
We did. We sold some to the ESB and a few other companies. And they turned out to be a complete and utter disaster.
Because of the battery life?
Exactly. And charging them and all that. It's just not... You've got to remember, Katie, that we tried using electric vehicles back in the 50s. You remember the electric milk floats?
Yeah, but surely our technology has come on a long way since the 1950s, Ray.
Well, it has, yes. The lithium-ion chloride batteries are a better design, but they were designed particularly for use in cell phones and laptops, not to be powering a big, heavy piece of metal, a car or a truck. It doesn't work.
So what are we supposed to do then? Because we obviously can't continue with diesel and petrol.
No, that's where I come in, because the way to go forward, and it's there in front of us right now, it's taking place right now, we must go to hydrogen. You can buy a hydrogen car over in California. If you go to buy a green car in California, they won't sell you an electric car. They'll sell you a hydrogen car. If you go over to Germany, they're moving over to hydrogen now. BMW and Mercedes-Benz, etc., are starting to make hydrogen cars. Hyundai are starting to make them. Well, Honda are making them.
Did I not hear that there was some hydrogen-powered buses introduced by Busairn? I think it was yesterday I heard this on the news. And these are buses that have, the only emissions is H2O, water.
That's correct. That's a perfect example, Katie. This is what we should be thinking about. We mustn't be buying electric vehicles. They're a disaster. They really are. Now, I know the lady there doesn't want me to say that, but I'm speaking from experience. I'm speaking from having sold these machines with electric batteries in them.
Okay.
And they just didn't work out. They'd always say to you, oh, if you listen to the ads, they say, it does approximately 458 kilometres. Do you know how they measure that?
How?
They use ideal conditions. In other words, a flat road, no wind, no rain. Don't use the heater, don't use the radio, don't use the air conditioning. One person in the car, and you might get 458 kilometres. But as the car gets older, the mileage you get from the batteries gets shorter. Look at your own cell phone. Cell phones do that. When you're using them, they hold their charge for some time, and then as time goes by, they don't hold their charge as well. That's a characteristic of lithium-ion chloride batteries.
But I think we might... Do we still have Eamon Stack on the line there? Eamon.
Yeah.
Yeah. Would you respond to that for me? Because that's...
Well, Ray is way off the mark here on several things, so it needs to be dealt with. Like, I'm an engineer, and I have no agenda other than saying, look, the electric cars are far superior. So the batteries are nickel-manganese batteries. They're not lithium-ion chloride. They're lithium with nickel-manganese. So 90% of the battery is nickel, and the batteries are 95% recyclable. Everything can be reused again, which would create this circular economy that once batteries are used in a car, they can be used for other purposes like power walls for solar, and then they can be completely recycled. All those materials, nickel and manganese and lithium, they're all perfectly recyclable. So that's a very good news story in the sense that we don't keep needing to consume and consume. We can just reuse and reuse. I think it's really important to just kill the hydrogen debate. To create hydrogen, we have to use a vast amount of energy, and it's hugely inefficient, where it's much easier just to take the energy from a solar and just put it straight into the car. So you're adding in an 80% inefficiency if you go down the hydrogen route, if you want to use clean hydrogen. But of course, if you want to use dirty hydrogen, like made from fossil fuels, then the CO2 problem isn't solved. So I think if we step back and say we need to solve, you know, climate change needs to be addressed, transport is 40% of the problem, and we need to move to a clean system that won't produce CO2 indirectly in the generation of electricity.
Yeah, and I'm just seeing a note from my producer here that those hydrogen buses cost about €800,000 each.
That's true, Katie. They are expensive to buy at this stage.
Well, it's expensive and expensive, Ray.
I don't agree with anything that man says there, because the lithium-ion chloride batteries are highly toxic, and they are very, very difficult to recycle, if they can be recycled at all. So yeah. I disagree with him there.
Yeah.
No, I'm speaking from experience.
I'm just speaking as an engineer, Ray, here, and saying, look, that's not absolutely true. They're completely recyclable, and there are many companies who do that. In Germany and the States. And just to say, the sales of hydrogen cars in California is 0.001% of the car stock. There's one charging point for hydrogen in California, and there's 10,000 electric charge points. So let's get to the facts and kind of say, you know, the future of transport is battery electric cars, and everything else really is a red herring.
Can I just bring in...
That's not true.
Can I bring in Etel, because you've been listening to this debate. You're very happy with your electric car, are you?
I am, and I'm neither an engineer nor a seller of hydrogen buses, so I know nothing about these things. But I fully expect that when I buy my next car in 20 years or so, that I will be, you know, buying something which is a completely different technology.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what's going to happen. And I don't know what that will be. But in the meantime, my electric car is wonderful.
OK, on that note, 51551 is our text line. We'll take a break.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Some of these days, you're gonna be so lonely. Some of these days, you're gonna miss me only. You'll miss my hugging. You're gonna miss my kiss. You know you'll miss me, honey. When I'm far away, then I'll feel so lonely.
The wonderful voice of Peggy Dell there. Rob Twamley. Good afternoon, Rob.
How are you, Katie? How are you doing?
When did you hear about Peggy Dell?
So, basically, my guitar teacher posted something up about a month and a half ago, 2 months ago, up on the Facebook. It was a picture of an unmarked grave in Glasnevin. And it was Peggy Dell's grave. Peggy Dell. So I decided to start a fundraising campaign to get her a headstone.
And I suppose just to tell people about Peggy Dell, if they weren't around in the 70s when she had, of course, her RTE programme, Peg on My Heart, she was a huge, huge star going back to the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s.
Absolutely, yeah.
What was it about her that you decided to take this step? Because, I mean, obviously, she died long before you were even born.
Well, that's it. She died long before I was born. I seen this up on my guitar teacher's page, and I said, I might as well do something about it. She died in 1979.
Rob, can I just ask you, if you're on your speakerphone there, you might just go back onto the regular phone. Rob,
can you hear me now?
Yeah. Oh, that's much better, Rob. Sorry, the sound wasn't great there. So yeah, so it was your guitar teacher put this up, and you just looked into it then.
Basically, yeah. So he put it up, and I said that might be something worth looking into. So I looked, done a bit of digging into it, and I seen that, you know, she was quite famous. She had her show on RTE. I read into it. She done some shows in the Olympia and the Theatre Royal. And I put a post up on Facebook, basically my fundraiser, and people contacted me. She done a thing on the Late Late Show with Noel Purcell, and then Noel Purcell's son, Patrick Purcell, actually got on to me saying he'd share it around and see how much publicity we could get for it, you know?
Yeah, and I'm looking at a picture of the grave in Glasnevin Cemetery here, and all this little wooden, I think it's a wooden plaque, little plaque on it saying Peggy Dell, piano player, but no gravestone at all.
Absolutely no stone at all. Now, someone actually put, like, I visited the grave there about 2 weeks ago, and there is, like, you can see in the picture, there's a kind of a stone plaque. Someone's kind of hand engraved. It's not fixed or anything, you know, it's kind of just placed there. And obviously, yeah, the stick with the laminated picture as well. Another thing about the grave is that her mom and dad are actually in the same grave, and it's not marked for them either.
Yeah, it's extraordinary because, I mean, she was such a huge star. How is the fundraiser going? Are you getting much support?
Yeah, I mean, I think you put out a little call or a thing about the show, me coming on to the show, and it's gone up to about €2,000 now. My initial target is €2,500. I'm not exactly sure how much I'll actually need, but €2,500 is kind of a rough guess at how much it's going to cost to get it placed. to get it made and placed on the grave. So any help is greatly appreciated, you know.
And you're not a, are you a musician yourself, or?
I am a bit of a musician. I'm a bit of a drummer. I play a little bit of guitar, and that's how I know my guitar teacher who posted it for me. I actually play in a samba band in Dublin.
A samba band, brilliant.
Yeah. And during the day, I'm a bus driver, so this is it's a random thing for me to do. But I thought it'd be a really good thing to to get done.
Okay, we're getting calls in on people who would know Peggy and the history of Peggy Dell. Connor Doyle, good afternoon, Connor.
Casey, lovely to chat to you. How are things?
Yeah, Connor, you're a historian of music hall theatre and, of course, the Theatre Royal, which is where was Peggy's home for many years.
That's correct. And first of all, I have to say, fair play to Rob, you know, because I didn't know the situation until he put this up on Facebook and Twitter. And he's done a fantastic job in trying to get a memory of a Dublin superstar, as she was back in the day. You know, like, people kind of forget that Peggy Dell just wasn't a Dublin star. She was an international star, because in the early 1930s, she auditioned for the great Jack Hilton and his orchestra. Now, Jack Hilton and his orchestra, big bands were huge back in the 30s and 40s. And she was due to tour with Jack Hilton through the States in the early 30s. And now, she lived just off Manor Street. Or Margaret Tisdale, as her real name is, and she said, I don't think I'll go. And there was a small electrical fire in her house that day, and she got up early and says, well, I'm up now and I might as well go. So she went to the States and she toured all over with Jack Hilton and was a huge success, believe it or not. She really was.
She had an incredible voice.
Yeah, well, it was a kind of a very husky kind of soul kind of singer voice. And that's what really kind of worked in the States particularly. And then, of course, she came back and she toured all over Europe with Jack Hilton and famously with Maureen Potter in the La Scala Ballroom in Berlin for Hitler and the Third Reich. I'm lucky enough to have the recording of that particular radio show.
Connor, stop. Yeah. Stop. Yeah, Maureen Potter, Hitler, the Third Reich.
Oh yeah,
happened?
That's another day. You know, like in those days. Well, of course, you know, or after the war, when everybody found out what was going on, like bands toured all over Europe, especially somebody of the importance of Jack Hilton. Yeah. You know, he really was one of the top bands across Europe, and they certainly played for Jack Hilton and for Hitler and the Third Reich in the La Scala Ballroom. I have the photograph of the La Scala Ballroom. And there's this huge swastika. Now, unfortunately, it's just the orchestra. Peggy and Maureen aren't in the photograph. But and then, of course, obviously the war broke out and she came back and was on the stage of the Royal for the next, 20 or 30 years. And like, people kind of forget that the Royal held 4,000 patrons. And like, there was nowhere like it in Ireland, or certainly it was one of the biggest theatres in Europe. And Peggy would have been one of the stars of those shows. And with people like Frankie Blowers, the Roylettes, Jimmy Campbell and the orchestra, Nixa Reed, Cecil Sheridan, all these people. But Peggy was one of these amazing artists who,
Yeah, and I was going to say, but her career, obviously would have waned and gone down with the Theatre Royal as that went. But, but she then had another encore basically on RTE. Yeah.
Well, what happened was, as Robbie was just saying there about the tribute, as they used to do on the Late Late to Maureen Potter, they did one on the great Noel Purcell. And I'm a good friend of Patrick's that Robbie was talking about, Patrick Purcell in Australia. And they did a tribute to Noel Purcell. And on it, Peggy Dell played. And people suddenly said, they kind of had forgotten. If people go out with kind of a bitter memory or they're not seen in the public domain, they suddenly drop out of everything. Because she used to play the piano. There was a furniture shop called Cavendish's in
Hold that thought for a second, Connor, because I'm told that we actually have that clip of Peggy Dell and Noel Purcell performing.
Oh, great.
Thank you, ma'am, says Dan, on the Late Show and Late Late. And this was 1973.
You're right.
Yeah.
What brought you into my room? to my room, to my room. What brought you into my room? Said the mistress unto Dan.
I came here to court your daughter, ma'am. To draw the can, I taught her, ma'am.
Ah, Dan, me dear, you're welcome here.
Thank you, ma'am, says Dan.
How come you to know me, daughter, me daughter, me daughter? How come you to know me, daughter? Said the mistress unto Dan.
Going to the well for water, ma'am. To draw the can, I taught her, ma'am.
Ah, Dan, 'tis you're the handy man.
Ah, thank you, ma'am, says Dan. She's a bonny girl, your daughter, your daughter, your daughter. A bonny girl, your daughter, and I like her well, says Dan.
She's a girl that's fit for any man.
Yeah.
And she has a graph for you, dear Dan.
Yeah.
Oh, Dan, me dear, you're welcome here.
Oh, thank you, ma'am, says Dan.
Now you can have me daughter, me daughter, me daughter. Now you can have me daughter, said the mistress unto Dan.
Great, great.
But when you take me daughter, Dan, you'll take me also, won't you, Dan? Ah, oh, Dan, me dear, you're welcome here.
Thank you, ma'am, says Dan. Now this couple, they got married, got married, got married. This couple, they got married, Miss Elizabeth and Dan. And now he keeps her mother and her father and her brother and...
Oh, Dan, 'tis you're the lucky man.
I got along to hell, says Dan.
The great Peggy Dell performing there with Noel Purcell. Connor, will you hang on there? And we have some other callers coming in on this. We'll take a quick break.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815. Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
And Connor Doyle, you were telling us about Peggy Dell working in Cavendish's in Grafton Street.
That's right, yeah. So she, you know, between gigs, you know, she worked in Cavendish's. They had a piano in the window and she'd go in and she'd play for All and Sundry. And of course, it was a great marketing ploy on behalf of Cavendish's. So the people walking up and down Grafton Street would hear the music wafting out and they'd go in and have a look and listen to Peggy Dell. And obviously, the idea was that they would buy some of the furniture, you know. So she had a much varied career, but she was one of these much loved Dublin characters that have sadly, as Robbie has just, you know, said, has fallen out of the living memory. And I think it's shocking when I saw the photograph that Robbie put up on Facebook and Twitter of her grave. And I was like shocked, quite honestly, you know, that
it is shocking because she lived alone. She never married. She didn't have children.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, obviously nobody, there was nobody there to
that's right. That's
put,
right.
Up, the, put
yeah.
up the gravestone.
That's right.
Connor, thank you for that. Hang on there. I want to bring in Jane because you remember her in Cavendish's, Jane.
Oh, very, very clearly. I worked in the area and I used to spend most of my lunch hours listening to her. I first came across her. My parents used to bring us to the Theatre Royal and Norman Medcalf used to play the organ. He'd come up from the pits, play the organ, and then she'd come on later. There were beautiful times, but I think it's so sad that she's an unmarked grave. I think that's dreadful.
I know, when you think of what a star she was.
She was just a lovely lady, lovely, yes, and so popular. And I just can't understand that she's an unmarked grave now. I think that's awful.
Yeah, well, hopefully, because of the great work that's being done now, that will be rectified pretty soon. Because I think, as you say, there is some support for changing that now. I want to bring in John. John, good afternoon.
Hello, Katie.
Did you play with her? Oh,
no, I didn't.
You ran dances.
Yeah. And she played in, you know, different towns around West Cork. In school, even we used to take a piano around for her to play with, you know. And she was a lovely person. And she stayed locally here in Macroom. And she went to Mass one morning in Clondrohid, which is near Macroom. And the priest knew she was there. And he mentioned it. And she got a great warm reception. And she took a bow, you know.
At the Mass?
At the Mass, yeah.
Right. And was she like this, a huge celebrity at that stage?
Oh, she was, yeah. The programme was on television at the time, you know.
Oh, this is when she had the Peggy O'Dell.
Yeah. Peg of My Heart.
Peg of My Heart.
Yeah.
So that would have been very much in her latter years then.
Yeah. But her voice was very good that time, you know. She had a very strong voice and she was very friendly and, you know, she got on great with the people, you know.
Yeah, and I'm looking at some ads here for Peggy Dell back in Dublin, the only Irish-born member of famous band. I mean, she was just like, as I say, a huge celebrity of that time.
Yeah, oh, she was. Correct. Yeah, she was very big. Yeah, she was. You know, and she was very popular around here, around Westcock. So.
Yeah, that was a headline from the Irish Press in 1936, and it's saying that. Sorry, I'm just reading it now. It's saying that Miss Peg Tisdall, which was of course her proper name, who for some years conducted her own band in Dublin and has completed a 9-month tour of America with Jack Hilton's band, is on holiday in Dublin. This is the Irish Press is telling its readers in 1936. And it then goes on to say, since January, by dieting, she has reduced her weight from 11 stone 6 pounds to 9 stone 5 pounds.
You wouldn't be allowed to put that in the paper today, Katie.
I am astonished that that is the second paragraph of a report in the Irish Press in 1936. Yeah. But again, I suppose, as I say, that's the kind of thing that celebrities get written about
And
somebody else pointing out to me, Jane, you were talking about Norman Metcalf coming up from the orchestra pit to play the organ. And I was thinking, where did I hear that name before? And of course, that was Norman Metcalf who played the music on Quicksilver with Bunny Carr.
That's correct. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, another celebrity from that era.
Yes.
Can I bring in now, I've got Valentine Dignan. Valentine, good afternoon.
Oh, good afternoon, Kate.
You played with her.
I played with her in the 50s in Fainéville in County Leitrim. In the two-band session she had, she was playing with Mrs. McGuinness and her orchestra at that time. And Mrs. McGuinness is a well-known Dublin band. She had very one musicians, Rory and other saxophonists and people that I knew.
And what did you play, Valentine?
I played the trumpets.
Oh, great.
But she actually honoured me on radio quite shortly afterwards by saying that I was the youngest trumpeter in Ireland. I was only 15 at the time, so that you can well imagine as well. I was a bit maybe 16. But I remember her dearly, and she was like a tremendous pianist. And there was another famous pianist from Carrick Shannon called Phyllis Dowd, or Phyllis Delancey, she was known then. And she was very much in league with Peggy. But Peggy was a wonderful person and such a good musician. And we played a lot. I may have played a game with her down somewhere in Kilfin and Tipperary many years afterwards. Or a few years afterwards, because we travelled the country playing ourselves at that time. And as I come from Roscommon originally.
Valentine, just looking at that clip of her in the Late with Noel Purcell, I mean, she was obviously quite a character as well. Like, she had a big personality.
She had a great sense of humour. And she was quite hilarious, in fact, because she had that humour that really goes with musicians, which I suppose at the time were a breed of their own because they were outstanding in their own field. And she was really superb. And of course, she had her own radio show on RTE back in the 50s, which I remember quite clearly. She did that as well as Walking in Cavendish's. She was very versatile, I have to say, you know. I loved her dearly.
And do you still play the trumpet, Valentine?
Well, I have one in the house. I live in Bray. But I just haven't the energy at my age now to do it, you know. I'd love to. My father was a very good musician as well. He was very famous down that in the country in those days. Many many people in Leitrim and Roscommon would remember him very much so, because he also appeared in the programme club Down with Jazz and RTE in the 70s, I think it was.
Oh, yeah. What was your father's name?
He was Patrick Paxdagnan, they used to call him.
Paxdagnan, well, I'm sure we'll get listeners telling us that they remember him as well. But yeah, trumpet is a fabulous instrument.
Well, it is the time. I had a very good tutor in Carrick and Shannon called Christy Armstrong, who'd played with a band in Carrick called Frank Murray, which I also played with as well. So we had a good tradition in those days with the bands before the show bands came on. There was a lot of good bands in the country.
Yeah.
And one of them, of course, would be Peggy Dell and Mrs. McGinnis, which was also, there was quite a lot of Dublin bands in those days, you know.
Yeah. It was a whole other world. Valentine, I need to take one last break, if you'll bear with us, and we'll take that now.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Now, I have here a letter that was written to the Evening Press, published in 1979, 4 months before Peggy Dell died. And it's a letter obviously referring to some public... some statements that Peggy Dell had made. I'll just read you the first paragraph, and it says, "How ironic and yet no more than typical of us Irish that while so many leading personalities of the Irish entertainment world are constantly pleading for aid to bring help and comfort to so many on the other side of the earth, that one of their very own that grand old trooper Peggy Dell had to confess publicly her disappointment and sadness that not one of her fellow artists offered her that most precious of all aids, companionship." And the letter goes on, "No one would have appreciated more the effort needed for even an occasional few minutes of their valuable time. Alas, it was not forthcoming." Conor Doyle, is that the saddest?
That is just, I don't know what to say. You know, when you hear something like that, you know, that is just terrible, you know. And to be honest, I'm surprised, you know, because my connection is obviously my godfather was Jimmy O'Dea and my aunt was Ursula Doyle and my uncle was Noel Doyle, and you know, I obviously knew Maureen Potter and all these people.
Yeah, and I would have thought that world stuck together, Conor.
I'm surprised. I'm very sorry that Peggy, and I'm sure it happened, you know, and I don't know what to say, quite honestly, that it's terrible to think that was the case back in 1979, you know. I don't know what to say, quite honestly, you know, that she actually had to write a letter, you know, and I hope when the letter was published that those people of their day did call in to see her, or if you, I don't know how to Peggy.
This was a letter written, I should say, by B. O'Donnell. And it basically finishes, "Peggy Dell is one of the few living legends left of a Dublin we older folk remember, excuse me, as beautiful and happy. May she find the love and companionship she seeks and deserves." Oh, my voice is just gone.
Okay. I hope the people who read that letter, you know, her colleagues and friends and those people she worked with, you know, kind of rallied around for her last few months, you know, and made that a more, you know, okay time for the poor lady. And here's our opportunity to put that right. Let's be honest. That's what this is about. It's to put something like that right once and for all. And not just for Peggy Dell. If there's anybody else that knows of any other artists out there who the same thing, you know, has happened, you know, please either contact myself, you know, I'm on Facebook, I'm on Twitter and all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
And that's why it's so important, you know, I'm working on the project now about the Theatre Royal Way, you know, Hawkins House is where the Theatre Royal was and they're knocking it down, and I'm trying to get them to, there's a new street, pedestrian street, so that's to name all these people, maybe on what you call it, on some of the flagstones on the street, so the people can remember people like Peggy Dell and all these superstars as they were.
Thank you, Conor. Thank you for that. We don't have time for all the other callers, and we have many of them coming in on this. We'll try to come back to tomorrow. Today's programme was produced by Rebecca Meehan. Let's play out with the woman herself.
You're gonna miss me, only. You're gonna miss my heart. You're
Driveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. For more on our 212 offers, visit your local Kia dealer or log on to kia.com.
1850 715 815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.